It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
You and you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I am digging into what actually happens in Washington because it's never simple, okay?
Okay,
now, look, to be clear, this wasn't a vote for or against censure because it never even got there. Democrats voted to table the House Freedom Caucus Chairman Andy Biggs's resolution to censure Schiff for his handling of the impeachment inquiry and his dramatization of the president's phone call with Ukraine's president. All Democrats voted to table it. All Republicans voted against it because they wanted an up or down vote. Now, after this tabling vote, Schiff tweeted this. It will be said of House Republicans when they found they lacked the courage to confront the most dangerous and unethical president in American history, they consoled themselves by attacking those who did. Meanwhile, Biggs is calling Schiff's lack of transparency an unfair process out.
They're not even going to let these guys, members of the committee, get access to the transcripts anymore. That's how objectionable this is.
This, as Speaker Pelosi issues a four-page fact sheet on impeachment entitled Truth Exposed, outlining what she says is the extent of the president's pressure campaign in Ukraine. She quotes the president himself, Rudy Giuliani, the whistleblower, and a U.S. Ambassador Bill Taylor's text message to U.S. Ambassador to the EU, Gordon Sondland. As you mentioned, Brian, this is important. She puts Taylor's quote in there. As I said on the phone call, I think it's crazy to withhold security assistance for help with a political campaign, but she does not include Sondland's response, saying there will be no quid pro quo. Taylor is set to testify today, guys, behind closed doors.
All right, so that's amazing. So they tried to hold this vote to censure Adam Schiff, and the Democrats would not even allow the vote. So that's how that's going down in the House right now. By the way, the impeachment, you know, ship is sailing. Nancy Pelosi still not called for a vote. It's still supposedly an inquiry. Chaffetz pointed out on Fox just a few days ago that really Nancy Pelosi has held a vote on impeachment. She's done it three different times, and each time it's failed miserably. She's done it in this past year, but she's not doing it now, we think, because she doesn't have the votes, and that's why they're not voting. And by the way, a poll is showing today that only 6% of Iowa voters say impeachment is most important. And we're going to get into polls today a little bit. John McLaughlin's going to be joining me shortly of McLaughlin Associates and the famous pollsters. And we're going to talk about what these polls mean and what they don't mean. So I hope you'll stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, President Trump was in, you know, he dominates the news. He's in almost every single story. You know, his mind is amazing to me. He's involved in everything. He's covering everything. Of course, he's not very smart. Remember that. That's what they tell us. He's not very smart. But yesterday, this not very smart president who seems to remember everything and talk about everything and be able off the cuff to discuss everything they ask him, that's amazing to me. Well, he's asked about the Democrats and the fight that's going on in the House, and this is what he said.
I think the Democrats fight dirty. I think the Democrats are lousy politicians with lousy policy. They want open borders. They don't care about crime. They want sanctuary cities. They don't care about drugs. They don't care about almost anything. They don't care about USMCA. How about that? I think they're lousy politicians. But two things they have. They're vicious, and they stick together. They don't have Mitt Romney in their midst. They don't have people like that. They stick together. You never see them break off. You never see somebody go out. And that's why I respected so much what I watched with Will Hurd today, because he was one of the few that didn't seem to be there. And yet he made a statement. He said, well, I haven't seen any complaints whatsoever from the Ukrainians. I mean, the Ukrainians didn't complain, and they didn't tell any of our ambassadors.
what President Trump is talking about with Will Hurd. He's a congressman from Texas, and he's been a very vocal critic all along of President Trump, and yet he said, made the statement in an interview a couple of days ago that what President Trump just said, that he hadn't seen any Ukrainians claiming there was quid pro quo. Nobody there, not a single person, is talking about that. It's just happening here in Washington. And so even though he's not a fan of the president's, that's what President Trump was saying. And he's saying, meanwhile, the Democrats are vicious. They're vicious, and they stick together. And he's right about that. They stick together so much that, let me just tell you, that it's reported now that Elijah Cummings, who just died, three or four days ago, on his deathbed, was still signing subpoenas for the impeachment. He died at 2:45 on Thursday, 2:45 in the morning on Thursday. The subpoenas were delivered to the agencies just one day before that. The subpoenas signed by Cummings request records related to the decision to end deferred action, temporary relief from deportation. Subpoenas also requested documents regarding the collaboration between ICE and U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, and on and on it goes. That reminds me of the funeral. Can't think of his last name, but the congressman from Minnesota who died famously. And there was this huge, some of you will not remember this. This happened a long, Wellstone, this happened a long time ago, but I watched it. I will never forget this as long as I live. I had never seen anything like this. He was a radical leftist, and he was very popular among Minnesotans. And so the left showed up in droves. The place was packed for the funeral, but it wasn't a funeral at all. They waved political banners. They shouted. They got up on the platform, and George W. Bush actually went to the funeral, and they insulted President Bush from the podium while he was sitting there. I've never seen anything like it. But then I realized that the left does not believe, really. There may be exceptions to this, but by and large, they do not believe that there's something beyond this life. And so why would they? What would they talk about at a funeral? What would they talk about? So they use it as a way. They die fighting this fight because they think that's all there is. It's sad to me that Elijah Cummings spent his last days that way, or his last hours that way. It's pretty sad. It's pretty pathetic. It's actually tragic. So he's right. The president's right. They are a different breed. They're vicious, and they fight, to the death. I guess you could say that, couldn't you, based on Elijah Cummings' story. All right, well, on CNN, Michael Bennett, who is a Democratic senator, had an exchange with the anchor that I thought was interesting. Let's listen, and then I'll tell you what I think about it. Let's listen.
There have been some smoke signals, if you could call them that, from the Republican side, public comments from Lisa Murkowski saying in no uncertain terms that what the president did with Ukraine, not acceptable. Mitt Romney, you're aware of his comments. Lindsey Graham, we noted, saying that he's at least open to the possibility of impeachment. You have a lot of private conversations with your Republican colleagues, I know, because you work across the aisle in the Senate. I'm not going to ask you to break any confidence you would have with them, but I'm curious, are you hearing more private expressions of support for removing this president than we hear publicly from the Republican side?
I would not say privately that I'm yet hearing private expressions of support, but I am hearing private expressions of people saying they're horrified by the president's behavior, and they're horrified that he invited Ukraine to interfere in our elections. They're horrified that the White House chief of staff admitted that it was a quid pro quo. They're particularly horrified by what the president did in northern Syria by abandoning the Kurds there, something that I think there's a consensus in the Senate no other president in history would have done. And, you know, we have to stand up to tyrants here and abroad. That's what we're all about. And I think, you know, as
all right,
I said
I'm going to interrupt
because
I want to get on. But you hear what he's saying. He's saying, this is Michael Bennett. Now, I actually, you know, often I'm skeptical about what people say, but I think Michael Bennett's probably telling the truth. I'll tell you why. Remember on Sunday, maybe you do remember, maybe you don't, Chris Wallace, my favorite Fox News host, was on with Mick Mulvaney. By the way, I'm hearing this morning that Mick Mulvaney's job is in jeopardy. I'm appalled by that. I am appalled by that. I played the interaction between Chris Wallace and Mick Mulvaney for you yesterday. It was from the Sunday, Fox News Sunday, and Chris went after him he was vicious. And Chris is not honest. And man, he is a. Hold up. If you think I'm the only person that thinks this, let me tell you what Greta Van Susteren said about that exchange. She said, Fox News Wallace wants to smear and cause trouble with anonymous impeachment claim. And the anonymous impeachment claim was this. This is what Chris said. I don't think I played this for you yesterday. He said that a well-connected Washington Republican told him that there's a 20% chance Republicans will vote to remove President Donald Trump in an impeachment trial. I talked to a very well-connected Republican in Washington this week, someone whose name you would know well, who says that if the House votes to impeach and it gets to the trial in the Senate, there's now a 20% chance, he believes. Obviously, that's just an estimate. Now, a 20% chance enough Republicans would vote with Democrats to impeach the president. Mick Mulvaney in response says that's just absurd. And then, of course, Chris kept pressing this. The comment about the 20% is just a person who clearly doesn't. No, this is. I'm sorry. I should do Mick Mulvaney. The comment about the 20%, this is what Mick says, is just a person who clearly doesn't know what they're talking about. And so Greta thinks that Chris Wallace wants to smear and cause trouble. By the way, Bloomberg has now branded Chris Wallace as the new face of the Trump resistance. But my point, it would be this. I don't doubt that someone told him that. I don't doubt that Michael Bennett is hearing a senator say that they're disgusted by the president. I know they are. This group of Republican senators gives me the chills. I've been angry with them for, we could almost say decades, because some of them have served that long. So they are pompous. Mitt Romney may, you know, Mr. Pierre Delecto, that's his, you know, hidden Twitter name, which I can't say much about other than, are you kidding me? Pierre Delecto, a.k.a. Mitt Romney, is the person speaking out. But trust me, these guys are slimy. And trust me, they're nervous about any connection with Joe Biden in Ukraine because they're doing the same thing. I'm not saying all of them, but lots of them are. They've made money hand over fist and have done very well for themselves sitting in the Senate. And many of them are Republicans. The Democrats are doing the same thing, of course, but I'm talking about Republicans right now. You don't think they want President Trump out of office? I know they do. I know Mitch McConnell would love to have him out of office. I know that Mitch McConnell has done precious little, really, to support him. Only when he's dragged, kicking and screaming, will he actually do something. So don't be surprised. Don't be surprised if this impeachment thing does not go the way they're predicting, because I think the Senate cannot be counted on. That's my personal opinion. I do not think they can be counted on. A couple of other really important things. For those of you in Virginia, you know there's a huge election coming up November the 5th. It's whatever Tuesday. It's November the 5th, the 4th, 5th, I think. And so it's a very, very important election because Virginia hangs in the balance. Virginia has now the governor and a lieutenant governor and attorney general are all radical leftists. They are abortion for all 9 months plus. Plus many other things. And the Senate and the House of Delegates are only separated. They're only controlled by, they're almost going to be controlled by leftists by one or two votes. And so there's tons, record numbers of amounts of money pouring into Virginia from the left. Not much money pouring in from the left, but I know that a lot of really good people in Virginia are trying to do what they can to save their state. And so I just want to alert you today, Alec Baldwin is flying in, you know, to champion the left in Virginia. He's going to be at Leland Station Clubhouse in Fredericksburg at 4 o'clock. And so many people are planning to be there to let Alec Baldwin know what they think, it's their state. They love their, I don't know what they're going to say, but this is what I would say. This is my state. I love my state. We're proud of it. You have no part in this. We want to become Hollywood or California. So if you'd like to go, and I know many of you are in Virginia, it's 4 o'clock today, Leland Station Clubhouse in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Leland Station Clubhouse in Fredericksburg, Virginia. You can look that up yourself for the address. But just a heads up, if you'd like to join us, others who are going to be joining there at 4 o'clock today. I have so much to tell you, and there's never enough time, but I'm going to take a break now. And when we come back, it'll be my delight to introduce you to John McLaughlin of the McLaughlin Group. And we're going to talk about all of this polling on impeachment, the 2018 midterm elections, the 2020 election. What does it mean and what does it not mean? Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
So there's this guy named Jordan, and he's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. But then he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched from medical insurance to MediShare, which is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this really going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. If you want to find out more, here's a number for you. 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance each day to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Sonny Perdue, the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture. Secretary Perdue heads the department responsible for federal laws concerning farming, food safety, and agricultural trade. Isaiah 30:23 reminds us of God's blessings in the farm and field. He will also send you rain for the seed you sow in the ground, and the food that comes from the land will be rich and plentiful. In that day, your cattle will graze in broad meadows. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Sonny Perdue as he works to ensure safe and abundant food resources. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of champions for Christ by texting GIVE to 839-858.
The first Chick-fil-A in Great Britain will shut down 6 months after it opened after a massive protest by a militant group of sex and gender revolutionaries. The Atlanta-based restaurant chain had opened a franchise in a mall about 90 minutes from London. Reading Pride, an LGBT advocacy group, said it was staunchly opposed to Chick-fil-A, say they did not share the company's moral beliefs. They also threatened to unleash protesters if Chick-fil-A ever again set foot on British soil. As a result of the gay mafia's attacks, an untold number of British workers will soon be heading to the unemployment line. Well, here's a thought. If you don't like Chick-fil-A's corporate values, don't go to Chick-fil-A! But that's not how the gay mafia works. They want to silence anyone who disagrees with their beliefs. And it's time for freedom-loving people to call out these thugs for what they really are, a bunch of intolerant anti-Christian bigots. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Going into this night, where do we stand?
This is where we stood coming into the night. 268 to 204, so clearly an advantage for Secretary Clinton.
Take a look here. If Donald Trump wins tonight, no matter who they voted for, take a look at these numbers here. 21% say they'll be concerned. 37% say they'll be scared.
This is what both candidates want. They want to be living there starting January 20th of next year. Florida has been going back and forth, back and forth.
Get
just changed
here.
Again. It's only 11,000 vote lead just now. It changed.
Math on your feet. I like this.
The Empire State Building in New York City. Take a look at our running tally of the electoral vote. Anderson, this night is turning out to be a real nail biter.
All along, the Trump campaign has been saying that Florida's a must win for them.
Absolutely.
And I mean,
they can't win without it.
Donald Trump will carry the state of Florida.
You know, I'm guessing that the people in Brooklyn, I can see their fingers.
That's
probably
the Hillary Clinton headquarters.
Yeah, fingers probably bleeding because there's no more nail to bite.
I wouldn't call anything encouraging for Hillary Clinton at the moment, to be honest with you, my friend.
Wolf, the scene here is so different than it was a few hours ago when people were happy and relaxed. I have been looking around the room at people who are stone-faced. Some of them have been crying.
This was a white lash against a changing country.
It was a white lash against a black president.
This is the people rising up saying it's time to listen to us. It's time to listen to us in Michigan and Wisconsin and work for the people.
Hillary Clinton has called Donald Trump to concede the race.
Yeah. Anybody remember that night? That was the night that Donald Trump won the presidency of the United States, that November of 2016. I think I sort of remember that. And one of the reasons why we were so shocked is because the polls continually told us that Hillary Clinton was ahead everywhere. She didn't even campaign in some states like Wisconsin because she thought it was a shoo-in. Predictions were that she was 90% likely. There was a 90% chance that she likely win this election. And so it was shocking that night. And most people say the polls led us astray. Well, we read polls every day. I do. I look at them. Today I see a poll from Iowa that says only 6% of Iowa voters say impeachment is the most important issue to them. That's interesting to me because the national polls are telling us that more and more people, now 51% said Fox recently, want the president to be impeached. That's what they infer. What do the polls mean? Can any of them be trusted? What are the measurements? What can we look for? I can't think of anyone better to ask that question than John McLaughlin, who joins us today. John is with McLaughlin Associates. John is a consultant and pollster. He has been for over 30 years. He's worked with people like Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, the Conservative Party in the United Kingdom. He's a graduate of Fordham College, but this is the part I did not know, John, and I think this is fun. You're a member of Mensa?
Sure.
You and my friend George Rasley, how does that happen?
You score well on an IQ test.
Do they seek you out and say, hey, you got to...
I would have taken it, I'm 63, I would have taken it when I was about college age in the 70s.
So, but I mean, so, do they
before
then...
Before the internet.
They tap you then. They catch it. And that's really amazing and fascinating to me. And I have found that you Mensa types actually do live up to your label. So, all right, John. So I'm going to have to be careful. I'm talking to a smart dude here. But I knew that already. John, let's talk about the polls in this past week. Now, I know that's a very broad question. And I know that you have to have a lot. That's why you have all this information at your recall. Because what now are the polls saying about impeachment? I mean, no, that's a broad question. But in general, what are they saying?
Well, first of all, there's a lot of polls that are just flat out bad. I mean, the same media that brought their bias to the polls in 2016 that were saying there was no way Donald Trump could win, Hillary had an electoral lock, are being done with the same bad methodologies. I mean, I do have an MBA in quantitative methods and statistics from Fordham. And what they're doing is they're taking populations that don't represent the likely voter electorate. In fact, if you go to the Real Clear Politics site of all these media polls, there's only one poll there that says likely voters, which is significant because these media polls, what they're doing is they're randomly calling phone lists and they're asking people whether they're 18 or older, so if they're an adult, or whether they're a registered voter. In the United States, we have 240 million eligible voters, over 240 million. In that group, only 139 million voted in 2016. Now, if you don't want to participate, that's up to you, but that was a record turnout. In the Trump campaign, we had built a strategy based on turning out more voters from the heartland, whether it was the Sun Belt or the Rust Belt, to beat Hillary Clinton. So the turnout in 2016 was a record turnout. You had 9 million more voters that came out that year than Obama and Romney, and they voted overwhelmingly for President Trump. And we did it in areas like Florida, where in the panhandle and in certain parts of Florida, we got to have rollout. And the same thing is true in those states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. And, you know, I've often said to the president, I said, you know, God didn't make you pay for a landslide where, you know, we won by 78,000 votes out of 139 million. So when you're looking at these polls, take them with a grain of salt, because I can tell you, like, example, the Fox News poll.
Yes, let's talk about that one.
It was registered voters. They said 51% voted to impeach. They biased the poll in two ways. They biased it in the sample in that 48% were Democrat primary voters or said they were voting in a Democrat primary. Only 37% said they voted in a Republican primary. That's an 11-point difference for their side. The 2016 election polls were only 37% Democrat and with 33% Republican. That's only a 4-point difference, and the rest were independents. So somehow in the Fox poll, when they did 77% on cell phones, where they're randomly calling cell phones, they don't use a voter list, they don't screen for likely voters, they've got a 7-point Democrat skew there compared to the 2016 turnout. Then in the wording of their questions, before they ask about impeachment, they ask whether they think Donald Trump is more corrupt or not. Then they ask if how troubling you find the situation regarding President Trump's dealing with the Ukrainian president. And then they ask, President Trump has made allegations about Joe Biden and his son's business dealings in Ukraine and China. How troubling you find those allegations? Well, I mean, it's not an analysis question. And then they ask, do you think President Trump should be impeached and removed from office? So it's
okay.
Like,
well, and
it's
also,
like it biased it two ways.
Yeah, and if you are calling people randomly who are not likely voters, and it doesn't take, we don't have to have, we can have a surface understanding to know that most Americans are clueless. So these questions are actually probably informing them of things they don't even know.
Well,
so you're setting.
They're not clueless, but they're being sandbagged. And that's where these polls are going to be, they'll be wrong once again, because in 2016, the weekend before the election, Jared Kushner got myself and Brad Parscale on the phone on Sunday night. Brad went through the analytics, and he was certain Trump was going to win. And I looked through all the polls, and we were dead even in a lot of these states. And I said, if we win the turnout on Tuesday, we'll win. And we got through to enough American voters to win. But there's polls like, believe it or not, New York Times used Siena College to do a poll of battleground states that was released yesterday. And they asked people, do you want to see President Trump impeached or removed from office? 43% said yes. 53% said no. And Republicans said no, wow. 92-5. And independents said no, 55-39.
Wow.
And 14% of Democrats said no.
Yeah.
The difference in the polls now is that the media is turning it into a totally partisan issue. They're following Nancy Pelosi's lead. The Pelosi Democrats are doing this in secret, unprecedented. No public hearings. Republicans aren't allowed to call witnesses. It's a star chamber kind of, it's a frightening kind of process, but it's totally partisan. So Democrats are falling in because what this is all about is Donald Trump was headed for reelection. The week before the whistleblower, remember him, the whistleblower that Biden's friend?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The week before that, the polls had President Trump with over 50% job approval, the good polls like Rasmussen, and they had him leading Biden 47-44. So the Democrats are like, oh my gosh, he's going to get reelected. We have to stop him. Well, the only way to stop him in 2020 if he's going to get reelected as Biden collapses and Elizabeth Warren comes up is to impeach him. We won't even have an election. We'll just get rid of him. And that's what's going on right now.
Yeah.
So it's really scary because they've taking the country's all attention into impeachment. And people, we found in a poll in September, we asked for the Trump campaign, we asked them, should Congress focus on working with Republicans to solve the nation's problems rather than focusing on trying to impeach President Trump? And among all voters, 66% said they agreed with that, and only 29 disagreed.
And that was in what month?
That was in September.
Yeah.
That was right before this all started.
John, I think one of the most damning polls, and you've already mentioned it, was the one that Fox did, 2 weeks ago, I think it was.
Yeah.
And I want to repeat what you just said, because you're speaking quickly. And I want to just repeat, you said that.
that.
That's all right. I have the same disease. But 48% of people in that random poll, again, not likely voters, just random phone calls, cells and landlines, 48% of the people they polled were Democrats, 37% were Republicans. And yet they have a headline that said 51% of American people want, I'm not reading the exact headline, but I recall it's 51% of the American people want the president impeached. And I remember a special report led with it. Bret Baier led with the poll, and all night long they talked about this poll. And that's 11 points difference. That's unconscionable. I mean, how can...
They got criticized for that from their own sister organization. They're all owned by Rupert Murdoch. And the New York Post wrote an article about the bias in the poll. Plus, at the same time, their sister organization, Wall Street Journal, came out with a poll, and they asked, was there enough evidence to have President Trump impeached and removed from office? And only 24% of the voters in that poll said they agreed with that. So three-quarters said they didn't. So it's amazing the kind of bias that has creeped into the Fox News organization, that Roger Ailes went out of his way to be fair and unbiased. And I knew Roger. I worked with him in campaigns across the country in the 1980s for Ronald Reagan and other people. He would have never allowed this poll to be published.
No, can you imagine that? I mean, that's okay. So let's talk about this other side of polls. Again, you've alluded to this, but let's kind of flesh it out a little bit. I have to say that I don't recall, I could be wrong about this, but I don't recall polls being very important until Bill Clinton's presidency. And we know that Dick Morris was famous for telling President Clinton to poll everything and to do, you know, act according to what the polls said. What do you know about that, John?
Well, I didn't work for Bill Clinton, so.
Really? You didn't? And, no, but.
No. And no, but I do know Dick Morris. I do know Dick Morris because he's moved to the right. So,
yes, he has. But at the time, he was not in that. And I do remember this well, John, that he was the one who felt, and he's very smart. He's a smart political strategist. He was the one who really persuaded the Clintons to start really governing by poll. And that's the first time I remember it becoming significant. Then polls just came out of nowhere. Tons of polls, tons of pollsters. But now it seems as though it isn't now just that. Mm-hmm. It is that polls being used to persuade and to discourage, both to encourage and discourage. Say something about the use of polls in that way.
Well, the vast majority of polls that we take, the campaign pollster, are never published. And I think that's true for both Republicans and Democrats because it's strategic information. The bad part is with the changing of technology. It's easier for anybody to use machines to get on the phone and poll people on landlines. Cell phones are more expensive, or even online you can do these polls. But with the proliferation of these polls, there's also, unfortunately, proliferation of quality, and it's declining. And the media decides the polls you're talking about, where the media publishes them, they all have news budgets, and they've all been slashed. So what they do is they decide to, well, let's do the cheapest poll possible. And then they let their biases filter into it. And the amazing thing is the one poll you should be able to get right is the poll that you do on election day, because you can compare it to when they count votes. And the media's exit polls in 2016 were wrong. And I've been there before when they've made wrong calls. Like, I was there in 2000 working for CBS Radio, where the TV side called the Florida for Gore, and we looked at the same poll and we said, well, it's got too many minority voters, not enough Cuban voters. When you average them out, it's a dead heat in Florida. We can't make the call. It's too close to call. So the media has biases that they let override their scientific knowledge and their, you know, common sense in a lot of this, and they're cutting corners where the methodology is bad. So the polls I'm talking about, where they don't use voter lists, the reason you don't use voter lists is because it's too expensive. You have to pay for the sample. So they don't want to pay for the sample to find out if they're an actual voter. The New York Times poll I quoted you, they actually had a list, and they called, Siena College called for the voter and asked for them by name. So that makes a big difference.
Yeah, in fact, let me repeat what you told us. That was the Siena College Battleground State poll, and 43% said, I forgot what the question was. 43% said yes on something.
No, when they asked, do you want to impeach the president and remove him from office?
Okay.
You had a 43% said do you support or oppose impeaching President Trump and removing him from office? 33% strongly support. 10% somewhat support. It's a total of 43. Somewhat opposed is 8%, and strongly opposed is 45%.
Wow. And that's a New York. Yeah, so that's a New York Times poll, and you say the difference is they actually had voter lists. John, can you stay with me for a few more minutes? I'd love to talk to you about
what
poll. Okay, good. John McLaughlin is my guest, and he's with John McLaughlin and McLaughlin and Associates, a really trusted poll, which some of us have worked with before. We know that John goes to great lengths to make sure the sample is correct, and also ask questions that are not biased, but actually trying to find out what people really do think. And there are polls like that, and we're going to talk about that too. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. In celebration of National Coming Out Day, the Van Buren Middle School in Kettering, Ohio, invited an actor to an all-school assembly to relate his experience believing he was gay back in sixth grade. And now he encourages students to embrace their own homosexual feelings. He did this to sixth, seventh, and eighth graders. To add insult to injury, the students' parents had no advance notice this assembly would occur. Efforts to indoctrinate our children aren't limited to California. This is psychological molestation. We must protect our children.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
So, are you a big picture kind of person, or do you love the little details of life? On the next Focus on the Family, Cynthia Tobias explains that half of us are global thinkers and the other half are analytic. Best of all, she shares how that impacts your relationships at home and at work. Next time on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly.
Focus on the Family is heard each weekday morning at 5 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
AFR's own J.J. Jasper is a morning on-air personality, author, comedian, Christian, and family man. J.J.'s also a keynote speaker at banquets, men's ministry events, pregnancy center fundraisers, and more. Here's what others are saying.
Hi, this is Nancy Wesley, Executive Director of the Pregnancy Care Clinic in Salem, Illinois. J.J.'s helped us set a record for the most funds raised at our banquet.
Information on J.J.'s availability to speak at your event is at jjjasper.com.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The Founding Fathers created a system of regularly scheduled elections so that we as the American people can select our own rulers rather than having political rule imposed on us. They even created the power of impeachment so that in case of gross abuses of power, presidents could be removed from office through impeachment even between elections. But they clearly intended this as a remedy only for the most extreme cases of high crimes and misdemeanors, not for what somebody said on a phone call. By going to the mattresses over a legitimate exercise of presidential power, asking a foreign leader to help investigate corrupt meddling in an American election, the Democrats are trivializing the power of impeachment. Impeachment was never intended as a way for a losing party to overturn election results they don't happen to like.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Sometime soon, overseers of the Federal Retirement Thrift Savings Plan are going to make a fateful decision. Will they greenlight or reject their previous plan to include problematic Chinese companies in the investment portfolios of past and present U.S. government civilian and military personnel? As with the recent widely publicized repudiation of free speech by the NBA, this Wall Street bid to pursue near-term profits without regard for long-term national interests is reprehensible. To make matters even worse, such transactions appear at odds with the TSP manager's duty to be responsible stewards for their retirees' money. Unbelievably, as American Securities Association President Chris Iacobello recently pointed out, China's corporations aren't required to comply with our transparency and accountability standards. One actually had $4.4 billion simply fraudulently disappear. Find this outrageous? Then join us in saying no at presentdangerchina.org. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
We're looking at the 2016 election, which was a disaster. We went through hell, my administration. People were destroyed. Their lives were destroyed. Not one person colluded. They found no collusion, no nothing. And they went through hell. There was a server, the DNC server, that never went to the FBI. The FBI didn't take it. It was taken by somebody that I guess it's CrowdStrike. Do you think I'm going to say something wrong when I feel that there's 25 or 30 or 2 or 20 or 10 or something? But there are a lot of people on these calls. Some, I think, listen for educational reasons. Some listen because they're members of the State Department. There are many people listening to these calls.
That was part of what President Trump said yesterday when he was taking questions from reporters. And, of course, elections do have consequences. We have seen this has been the most tumultuous election and aftermath I've ever lived through, and there have been many. But this is very, very different. The president's pointing out that many people's lives have been ruined because of that election. And President Trump, if the left has their way, his life will definitely be ruined. And I always think of Hosni Mubarak behind, you know, a cage in a hearing room when I think of what the left would really like to do to President Trump. It would be thorough destruction, and not just the destruction of him as a person, and that's bad enough, but the destruction of America and our constitutional republic. And by the way, there's a great article that I'm not going to get to today, but it's called The Revenge of the State Department. It's Politico published it a couple of days ago, and it's just talking about how the State Department now is in out rebellion. We've told you that most of them are Democrats. They have been a huge part of the resistance. They are now this would be too strong a statement because they are openly, though, criticizing Pompeo. They don't like him. We've had several of them now testify, even though the president said they didn't have to in this impeachment inquiry, and sort of try to air their dirty laundry. And then also we find out, as of last night, many of the CIA analysts are lawyering up because the Russiagate probe is expanding. And so this is really, we are in a fight for the life of our republic. I hope you understand that. I say that almost every day, maybe not quite that way. And that's why we can talk about polls and it can be light and bright and interesting. But this, there's so much resting on how the American people feel, how informed they are, and what they actually do in these upcoming elections. John McLaughlin is my guest. He's with McLaughlin and Associates. He's been in the polling business for 30 years. John, what are the polls? What can we believe about the president's approval rating? Because you know, it goes all the way from the 30s up to 51 or whatever. What is the truth about that? Do we know?
Well, the same bias that existed in the Fox News poll I mentioned to you exists in these other polls. Some of them they'll have, like Quinnipiac, which polls a lot in Florida. They know that on election day in 2016, Republicans with 33% of the turnout. A lot of times they publish a national poll because they're doing adults or registered voters, and again, they're randomly dialing numbers, not pulling off of voter lists. They'll show 25, 26% Republicans in their samples. They've been raising it lately because we've been pretty critical. But then they oversample independents who are behavioral Democrats. So the sample's biased against us, and you can usually add 5 or 6 points to whatever President Trump has. The most reliable media published poll that we see is Rasmussen, because they're the only one that does likely voters. They had him, I think, at 46% yesterday, 47%. He was, before the impeachment attacks, he was hovering, he was over 50%. And what matters to the Democrats is that in their heads, they know the last two presidents to get reelected got reelected with 51%. George W. Bush got reelected with 51% in 2004. On election day, he had a 51% job approval. Barack Obama, when he got reelected, it was after Hurricane Sandy. His job approval had moved up to 51% on election day. He got reelected with 51%. So every time they see President Trump over 50% job approval, they know that's going to convert to 50% or better among the voters. Plus, the Democrat establishment candidate, Joe Biden, their chosen hair-haired candidate to beat President Trump, is collapsing. And as he collapses, they're saying, you know, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, they're looking at their field of candidates, the mayor of South Bend. I mean, they can't beat Donald Trump. So they're going to try to take him out by impeachment, because if they go to an election with the results that President Trump has had, record low unemployment, over 6 million new jobs created, new and better trade deals with Mexico, Canada, forcing China to come to the table, strengthening the United States in terms of not getting us involved militarily overseas in stalemates, but, you know, using the military might to beat ISIS and to keep America safe. They've seen this, and they're saying that he's produced results in spite of all the opposition the establishment has given. And one thing, you know, that I really think is at the heart of this corruption is President Trump beat the Republican establishment and beat the Washington establishment. And he's the only president in history ever to do that. And they've resented it ever since. And they tried to stop him, even spying on our campaign, which is pretty clear. They used the FISA warrant to obtain a, you know, warrant, surveillance on our server, on our emails. So they had all our polls, they had all our information. And that had to be authorized by somebody. And it had to be okayed probably at the highest levels of the Obama administration, where no one has asked, what did President Obama know and when did he know it? And Attorney General Barr, with impartial attorney U.S. attorneys, has been investigating this over the summer. I've even, when I was in Europe working for clients over there, I'd heard that he'd been in London and in Italy interviewing people about this. And, you know, that those implications, when you talked about the CIA, people watering up, I mean, they should, because it's scary that if the CIA, the FBI, and members of the Obama administration, and if the president knew it, that they were spying on a domestic political campaign. It's you know, that's a nightmare for a democratic country.
John, you know, I just heard yesterday Jim Simpson, the owner of founder of Fusion GPS, has written a tell-all book, or a book anyway, about his part in this. And one of the things, just one thing I want to point out, it looks as though Obama for America gave almost $900,000 to Fusion GPS to do this dossier. Now that has to be confirmed. I don't think he wrote that. That came from a different source. I read a compilation of stories here, I mean, that's stunning. I mean, that's the closest link, if that pans out to be exactly what we think it is. That's the closest link we have to Obama being directly involved in the Fusion GPS and the beginning of the Russian dossier. But I want to ask you something, because I, as a pollster and someone who watches other things besides your polls, what are we to take from these rallies? What, 50,000 people in Dallas, 20 inside, 30 outside, 30,000, I think, in Minneapolis the night before. Does that mean anything? Is that misleading to people? Does that reflect how Americans really feel?
Well, it tells you how solid and strong President Trump's base is, because they're so dedicated to him. He's been absolutely forthright and strong and solid in his dedication to conservative principles and the advancement of our policies. And you can see the results, where the economy's growing, America's strong again, and he's been probably the most pro-life president we've ever had. So he's got a dedicated base that, you know, if it's a blizzard or if it's a typhoon, they'll come out and they will fill a stadium, and then they will, you know, lots more of them will line up outside and try to get in. And the media doesn't like to show those rallies, because the president does a great job speaking for hour and a half, sometimes almost 2 hours. I mean, the one was one he recently did where he was there for almost 2 hours. Just him speaking. And it shows you that the Trump base is highly loyal and dedicated and motivated by him. Now, what they're afraid of is him expanding that base. So they know 63 million people voted for him before, but, you know, in 2008, 70 million people voted for Obama. So, and we had 139 million people come out in the 2016 election. It'll be even higher this time. And
you think so?
You could have 100. Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, because the opposition, you saw in 2018, we had the highest midterm election ever, where in 2010, you had 90 million people come out. 2014, you had 83 million people come out. In November of 2018, you had 118 million people come out. And that was a record midterm election turnout. So you're going to see a record presidential turnout. The bad part about that is their forces, the anti-Trump people, are motivated by the left and the media, et cetera. And we've got very powerful opposition, whether it's Tom Steyer running for office, spending, you know, tens of millions of dollars attacking the president, or George Soros behind the scenes, you know, running his open border society and really trying to undermine, you know, a lot of institutions in the United States, whether it's law enforcement, whether it's, you know, religion or, you know, the family. I mean, you've got, you know, serious opposition that the biased media, you know, runs an ally. You know, they run as allies, and it's unbelievable how they're trying to sandbag the American public.
Well, and of course, we've got problems inside the camp, too, with Mitt Romney and other. I just spent quite a bit of time before you joined me this morning lambasting the Republicans in the Senate, which I often do, always do, pretty much, with very few exceptions. I just don't think they have his back, and I don't think we can count on them at all in this impeachment procedure.
You're right. And you should. I think most of the senators will be there, but the Republicans that elected and stood by the Republican majority in the Senate need to realize the Senate should demand that the House go back to House precedent and vote on this inquiry to give Republicans the right to call witnesses, to give the president the right to have his lawyers there. Because this whole impeachment process would fall apart if it was run fairly and according to historical precedent, because there's no way they can prove what the Constitution says, treason, bribery, or high crimes and misdemeanors against this president. And there are 31 Democrats in House seats that Donald Trump won that are up for re-election, and they don't want to vote on this impeachment inquiry, and we need to make them vote. And the Senate, the Republicans in the Senate, should demand that Pelosi.
Whoops.
There's just demand. I wish Hillary would get back in, but
she might.
yeah, please.
Yeah, really. Well, so John, I just was reading that Jason Chaffetz said that. Pointed out what we should have been, I should have kept track of, that there have been 3 impeachment votes in the House prior to this last few months, prior to the inquiry. And so my thought is that, not that this is so brilliant, but Nancy Pelosi is not calling for this 4th vote because she knows the votes are not there. Would you agree with that? Or do you think there's another, do you think it is the whole fact that she's trying to just drag it on regardless?
No, I agree with that. At some point they're going to have to vote on they're going to have these trumped up phony star chamber kind of articles of impeachment that won't stand any test of rational examination. But the media is so biased and so anti-Trump that they will make it some sort of high crime and treasonous document, and they will have to vote on that at that point. And that will be a telling moment for American democracy. And the Senate, the Republicans in the Senate always like to portray themselves as adults in this process.
Uh-huh.
Well, they need to.
You mean Pierre Delecto?
Yeah, right. No, I'm talking about the other senators.
Oh, the others. All right. Okay.
That was it. But those, I mean, the vast majority of Republican senators need to stand up now and say, you know, if you want us to hold a trial, you need to have an open process to bring these articles of impeachment forward, like we have done every time before. There were going back to Andrew Johnson, certainly going back to Nixon, and going back to Bill Clinton. When the House brought those articles of impeachment, there was an open process and a vote on the inquiry, and Nancy Pelosi is not doing that right now, and the Senate needs to demand that. Otherwise, they should say, this is DOA. We're not going to entertain the trial when we're being railroaded.
John, it's not right.
Well,
I totally agree, but they're not doing that. Instead, Mitch McConnell is holding meetings with the senators and gearing up, getting ready, teaching them about the process. That's what he's doing. I don't hear anyone saying what you just said. That's why I'm a little ticked. But John McLaughlin, McLaughlin Associates. John, thanks so much. I really appreciate your time. And thanks for joining us. Have a great day. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.